This is Late Hits on ESPN 97.5, presented by Dr. Jennifer Joseph, Get Physical Rx, by Dr. Krista Reyes, Texas Sinus and Snoring Audiology, and by BetUS, the original online sportsbook. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Patrick Creighton.
Late Hits, ESPN 97.5, the only live and local sports talk show in this city. Blows my mind that we are the only evening sports talk show in the fourth biggest city in the country, and there's one local sports talk show at this hour. Like, one. It's just crazy to me. Before we get into the week that was in the NFL, let's get to the phones. Mark, you're on late Hits. What's going on, Mark?
Hey, Creighton, man. I just want you to know, hey, you talking about the city is genuine, man, and Houston loves you, man. Appreciate you coming down here. Appreciate you building up the city. Hey, man, everything you're saying is building us up. Hey, keep up the good work. Love having you, and keep it up.
Man, I appreciate it, brother. Thank you very much. I know that when people say stuff like that to you, people say, oh, yeah, well, I genuinely appreciate when people do, because, look, I'm going to be honest. Coming from New York, you don't expect people to welcome you. Like, that's not how it goes in New York. Like I said, you know, all my friends from Brooklyn, if you ever called your friend by their actual name, they thought you were mad at them. You never called your friend by their actual name. You called them things, I have to PG this, but butthole, D-bag, F-wad, S-head. Like, this is what you called your friends. And if you didn't call your friends these things, they knew you were mad at them. Like, it was just very different. And when you first come down here, and people are just genuinely nice, I mean, it is a culture shock, but it's a good culture shock. People are just genuinely freaking nicer down here. And I think it's been a big part of why I think I'm nicer than I used to be. I mean, I used to be real. When I first moved down here, I don't think you could find three people that didn't think I was an a-hole. Because just the New Yorker in me. Like, when you're outside, like you're down here, somebody who's a hardcore New Yorker, without saying a word, I've rubbed you the wrong way. I had to learn to let that go. I had to learn to let that go and embrace, like, the local sentimentality, the politeness, the respect. You have to learn that. And it took a while because, you know, 40 years in New York, you learn to be cynical to everything. It really, the best way I can explain this is J.J. Watt. When I first moved down here, you know, I started covering J.J. Watt, flagship. And J.J. was a Boy Scout. But he was also the best defensive player in the league. He was a Boy Scout. Always says the right thing. Always does the right thing. On the field, off the field. No vices. No bad interactions. Nobody's got anything bad to say about him. It's like, come on. Nobody is that squeaky clean. Nobody is that perfect. He's an athlete. This skeleton's in the closet. It'll happen. JJ's just different. JJ, even yesterday getting inducted into the Ring of Honor, still humble, right? Still respectful, still pushing, you know, credit to others. JJ's just a different kind of guy. You know, the way he conducts himself, the right and wrong, the commitment to community, especially in the wake of Hurricane Harvey, the amount of money that J.J. Watt raised, because God knows that the federal government wasn't getting any of that money here. Hell, it's 6 years later. The federal government still hasn't gotten all the money here. It's three different administrations. J.J. Watt got money here. Like, the biggest crime J.J. Watt ever committed was taking shirtless selfies on Instagram. I mean, like, that was it. He's the greatest player I've ever had the coverage of covering. And he looked really good in that red jacket. In a couple of years, he's going to look really good in a gold jacket. Yeah, I was saying during the game on Sunday, I said, you know, if the NFL did their Hall of Fame the same way baseball did their Hall of Fame, would J.J. get in with 100% of the vote, or would there be some D-bag who would deliberately not vote for him just so that he wouldn't have the 100%?
I think he'd get 100%. I don't think there's somebody out there that hates J.J. Watt that much. Like, Astros, sure, but not J.J.
Nobody should hate J.J.
No, I agree. Can I ask you a quick question? Do you think he regrets going to the Cardinals and not the Steelers to play with his brother now, that the last 2 years, the way it turned out?
I don't know. I mean, on one hand, you could say, oh, you could have gone to play with your brother. Instead, you went out to Arizona. You played with D-Hop. At the same time, the Steelers are his brother's team. And I think he respects that space, that that's TJ's team, and he didn't want to potentially overshadow his brother, not necessarily in on the field, but in the media attention and things like that. I don't think J.J. wants to be the story. J.J.'s never wanted to be the story. If he had gone to Pittsburgh, they would have been a story. Every single week, it would have been a story. And I don't think he wanted that kind of attention. I think he wanted that to be TJ's team, and he respected that boundary. So I understand. I feel like I understand why he didn't do it. Look, the first year he was out in Arizona, they had a shot. Kyler got hurt late and fell apart. And then the second year, well, Kyler got hurt early, and that was that. But I don't think he regrets not going there. I think that was a thought out decision not to go there. By the way, Austin Deculus played 38 snaps on Sunday, and Garon Christian played 33 snaps on Sunday as they basically shared left tackle. Never heard either one of their names called once. That's a good thing. And after the game, Laramie Tunsil on Twitter sending a message to Titus Howard. See you this week. Reinforcements are coming. And if this is what CJ can do behind guys that couldn't start at Georgia, I'm really looking forward to see what he can do behind the real offensive line. We will get to our NFL sound at 9:30. Coming up, it's time for Money Plays. Our buddy Mackenzie Rivers from bettingpredators.com, from pregame.com. He's going to join us next. We're going to take a look at lines this week that are already moving and why, getting you the early edge on betting for week 5 in the NFL. Next!
ESPN 97.5.com on the Chase Long.
Excuse me. Excuse me. What?
Here comes the money.
Here we go.
Money talk.
Here comes the money.
It's time for Money Plays with Patrick Creighton.
Ow! Love that money.
Presented by BetUS, the original online sportsbook. Now, get ready to take down the best money plays of the day.
Joining us right now on the HR&P guest line, professional handicap with pregame.com or with bettingpredators.com is our buddy Mackenzie Rivers. What's up, Mac?
What's going on, Patrick? How are you living?
You know what? It's been a pretty good weekend down here in Houston. Texans, Astros, Longhorns, A&M. It's been a pretty good weekend, brother. I'm feeling good. We're living good. We're eating good.
Did you dip your toe in Astros plus 800 to win the division like 2 days ago?
No, I missed that boat.
Yeah.
Should have. I've been a little off on getting all my wagers in for the past, I don't know, 2 weeks. I've been busy with a lot of stuff, and it's impacting my earning power. But this is why you're here, to help with my earning power and that of everyone who listens to this show. And you know, earlier before the season started, you know, you and I talked about how, you know, lines before the season, and a lot of times you can find value because the lines haven't started to move yet with how the season is moving. We're four games into the season, and lots, you know, guys are going down. Some teams look better, some teams look worse. And this is the part of the week where we can see lines move. So I wanted to ask you about movement in lines early in the week, what to take from that movement, and how to find advantages when you start to see lines moving. So let's start with the Bengals, because, man, the Bengals are a hot mess. And I think a lot more was expected of them than what we've seen of them so far. And going into week five, you know, this Bengals team, man, their season is hanging by a thread. They're 1-3. They are now 3-point favorites over the Cardinals in Arizona next week. So the line has moved, and it's come down to just 3. When you see the line adjust like that, and the line has actually gotten smaller, what is this telling you? And how can bettors read this to make better decisions?
It's a great question. I think you got to think about who's betting when. So these numbers are usually out, you know, since May when they put the NFL schedule up. Someone somewhere is willing to take a bet on any one of these games. So in that summer, the Bengals, you know, Super Bowl favorite, they were 10-1 to win the whole thing. They were 7.5-point favorites at Arizona. All right, now just skip forward all the way till before the games were played Sunday. All the information, Burrow's injury, not only having the injury, but how much it's definitely affected him. Not only that, but the Cardinals improving, doing amazing, beating the Cowboys on the road, despite, you know, all these disadvantages, getting a new quarterback the last second. Well, a week ago, this line was 7. Bengals, 7 at Arizona. So all that information was about a half point the market was adjusting. But those are low limits. Not many people that are really spending tens of thousands of dollars are looking at these look-ahead markets. You just really can't get down the amount you can day of the game, or really week of the game. So what happened? Sunday games are played. The Cardinals, I thought, looked pretty good against the 49ers for a lot of it. The Bengals lost by 24. It looks like all the doubts are real about Joe Burrow and the calf's ankle. Well, if you're looking at that line, I think it's really telling Sunday night to see where the sharp books are moving, because that line's ticked down to Bengals 6.5 road favorites, Bengals 6. And you're looking at these underlying metrics. The Bengals are one of the worst teams in the league through four games. Maybe it'll get better, but the metrics say they're one of the worst four teams in the league. So once you see that moving with the sharp books, I think you grab it before it moves too far, because in this case, woke up Monday morning, it was 4, had a nice coffee, went to Starbucks, had, you know, bacon, egg, and cheese, and then it was a 3-point favorite. Now, that's just too far. To me, at this point, you can only look to bet against it, because anyone who's really sharp, grab the 6, grab the +5, grab the +4 this morning. I think it's a lot of followers coming in afterwards that push this line all the way. The Cardinals only has a 3-point dog, and I think at this point, considering who's already made the bet and where it's gone, you can only look to fade the move.
So this went from a buy to a don't necessarily go there.
Right. I mean, it's tough because I'm telling you to bet both sides at different points, but that's how the pros do it. They don't bet teams. They bet numbers. Last week when this was a touchdown, there's a lot of, you know, smart people that said that shouldn't have been a touchdown. So it moved. How much it should have moved? To me, maybe 2 or 3 points considering Burrow's injury. You know, it's only one data point. You got to take the whole picture into consideration and preseason expectations. 4 points from a key number of 7 to a key number of 3, in my opinion, obviously it's an art, not a science. I'm just reading the tea leaves here, but in my opinion, the value has gone so far the other way that actually I would look at the Bengals at this point.
Now, Mac, another game where the line has moved is the Ravens and the Steelers. That line has moved at least 2 points. It's now Ravens -4.5. In a game that's in Pittsburgh. There was a report out earlier today from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette that Kenny Pickett's knee injury is not considered to be serious. He's going to be fine. They haven't determined if he's actually going to miss any time or not. But now that you've seen this line move, you know, away from the Steelers up to now 4.5 for the Ravens, what does that tell you, and how do you look at that line?
It tells me Kenny Pickett's not going to play. And there's all the time in sports betting where the bettors are pretty sure about something, because otherwise this number wouldn't be where it was going to be, even if all the reports, even till Sunday. And this isn't always the case. The bettors got wrong Deshaun Watson, but usually the bettors will have a good inkling before the official news. Because you said it moved at least 2 points from Steelers minus, or 2.5 point home dogs to 4.5 point home dogs. But those are two of the probably most key points in NFL betting, getting on and off the three. So it's really more like a 3 or a 4 point move. And yeah, you downgrade the Steelers because they lost, and maybe you upgrade the Ravens because they beat the Browns pretty good, but you're not going to move it 4 points. To me, that says that Mitch Trubisky is going to be in the lineup Sunday. And in this series where every game ends up three, the market says, or usually, you know, this is a close game, 3 point margin, I think like 18 out of the last 25 games or something. The market isn't buying it. They say the Steelers are a lot worse than we thought, and they're going to have a backup quarterback Sunday.
He's Mackenzie Rivers, professional NFL handicapper with pregame.com, with bettingpredators.com, with us on the HR&B guest line for Money Plays. Let's talk about our Houston Texans, because, man, we've got two of the best games played by the Houston Texans the last 2 weeks that we've seen in years. And they are in Atlanta next week, and this line has moved several points. This went from a three-point game. Now I'm seeing it down as low as Atlanta minus one. So this went from Atlanta favored by three to Atlanta favored by one in their own building against the Texans. Where are we reading here?
So this is a bold statement by the Vegas market. I don't think most casual bettors with their preseason magazines and Madden ratings would come to this conclusion. The market is saying right now the Houston Texans are better than the Atlanta Falcons. The Houston Texans are better than the Atlanta Falcons. That's the only thing you can read from this Vegas market. And I know there's a downgrade, maybe because of the London trip. Maybe the market was late to realizing, or late to putting the chess pieces together, that that's probably more of a disadvantage than we thought, you know, maybe a week ago. We hadn't priced that in fully. But even with that, even if that's worth a point and a half, this is so far from the NFL home field advantage of three in a dome. You can say the Texans, the market is saying, is better than the Falcons, and I don't disagree. I think much of this league is, can you throw the ball and can you stop the run? The Falcons have proven pretty inept at throwing the ball the last 2 weeks. Desmond Ridder, his worst QBR games each of the last 2 weeks. And the opposite for C.J. Stroud, 80 QBRs each of the last 2 weeks, hasn't been sacked each of the last 2 weeks. That's very impressive for the young rookie. It's been said, and I definitely don't disagree, C.J. Stroud has to be the number one pick if this was a redraft, don't you think?
You know, when Carolina traded for the pick, one of my buddies works in Carolina for the fan upstate, and I said to him, I said, and I tweeted this out, I said, if they screw this up and don't take Stroud, I'm going to laugh my ass off. Well, thank you for screwing it up, because now he's here balling out. I have nothing against Bryce Young, and I do not wish ill for him. I want him to be successful, but I always felt Stroud was the best quarterback in the class. He was the guy, and you know, the Texans, a lot of things usually don't go right for the Texans, and that did. And I'm very appreciative of that.
Yeah, he's laughing all the way to the bank now. If he was buying Stroud stock and selling Young stock. And I think it's really telling that last March, when they made that trade with the Bears, the Panthers did, all the money, obviously with not inside information, but with some inkling, all the money came in on C.J. Stroud to be the number one overall pick. He was a minus 200 favorite for about a week after that trade happened. Obviously, no one was in the building. Nobody knew anything. But the Vegas market said, this guy's the best prospect. If someone's moving up to get a quarterback, they should get this guy. The Panthers zigged when everybody else zagged, and it hasn't worked out for them.
As I said, I'm very appreciative that they I think they got that one wrong. And still, I hope, you know, I don't wish ill to Bryce Young, and I hope he has a nice career. I just don't think it's going to be as good as C.J. Stroud's. And, you know, you can still be a good quarterback and just not be the best. I'm not wishing ill on him, but I think Texans absolutely got the best guy. One more game I got to ask you about, Mag, is the Thursday night game. The Bears and the Commanders. The Bears should have a victory. They should have gotten a win over the Broncos last week, and they somehow stole defeat from the jaws of victory. And since that time, this line has now moved. This was a you know, Commanders by 4.5, like yesterday.
Yep.
It's Commanders minus 7 right now.
And the Bears just had the most impressive game of the season. So what is it saying? It's saying that there's a couple things going on here. One thing, the Bears, even in their most impressive game of the season, still gave up 25 points for the 14th straight time, an NFL record. So the defense, you just downgrade again. You just keep lowering their power rating on that side of the ball. But the offense, they actually had a good performance. Justin Fields actually started 16 for 17 throwing the ball, threw four TDs for the first time in his career. So why do we downgrade them? I think it's psychological. I think the market is looking at Eberflus super flustered in his press conferences, trying to say, well, we're moving in the right direction, even though we lost 14 straight. I like what some of the guys are doing, even though we probably got to release most of them. It's just a mess. And I think the market, looking at the Commanders, who they're lost to the Bills, doesn't look so bad now, even though it was a terrible 37-3 drubbing. You know, a lot of people are going to look like that against the Bills. Against the Eagles, another good team, another undefeated team, they looked pretty good. So the Commanders, arrow up, and the Bears, even when we thought they were the lowest power-rated team in the league, and they were still worse and more of a mess and more of a cluster F than we ever expected. So I could only look at the Commanders here. I think they actually do have a home field advantage. Historically, they haven't, but new ownership group, new vibe in the building in Landover. I would actually look at the Commanders here, maybe in a tease, or maybe look around, try to shop and get a -6.5 while they're still out there, because I wouldn't touch the Bears with a 6-foot pole at the moment. With the 6-foot Ryan poles at the moment, I wouldn't touch them.
He's Mackenzie Rivers, pregame.com, bettingpredators.com, with us on the HRMP guest line. Now, one of the things that you said earlier was, you know, pros don't bet teams, they bet numbers.
Yeah.
And, you know, not only do you do the NFL, you also do NBA. You do a lot of things. We happen to be talking about the NFL, and now we're privileged here to the NBA. With the trade of Damian Lillard going to Milwaukee and Drew Holiday going to Boston, how has that changed odds in the NBA? How has that shaken up the power for, you know, how Vegas lays out the odds in the NBA, especially in the Eastern Conference?
It closed the Eastern Conference, in my opinion. And the Vegas market, you look at the odds historically, it's more wide open in the NBA futures market than it's ever been. Usually there's a 2-1 favorite. Or in the Warriors' days, there's a -150 favorite. But there's nobody like that. At least there hasn't been. I mean, no one was better than 5-1 a week ago. But Damian Lillard is the best possible option to pair with Giannis. He's great at almost everything in basketball, but with 5 minutes to go, he doesn't really have a post move, kind of like the way people talked about LeBron early in his year. He doesn't have a go-to scoring move that scares you. He's not the guy you want with 5 minutes to go, where you have to get a bucket and you have to run clean offense with no turnovers. How do I know that? Because the last two games the Bucks played last season, they were up by 15-plus points with 6 minutes to go, and they completely stagnated. There was no Dame time to be found. So they improved a lot. Drew Holiday, I'm going to talk about in a minute. I think he's tremendously underrated, but Damian Lillard was exactly the solution to their problems. So they're once they get Dame, they're immediately favorites. They jump the Nuggets, they jump the Suns, they jump the Celtics. They're plus 350. They go from 7-1 to plus 350, and I was writing the obituary on the Celtics. Because I always thought they were more talented than anybody, and they had the best opportunity, but they never really, in my opinion, got the right point guard, got the right leader of the ship. And now with Damian Lillard and Giannis against him, I thought they had no chance. Well, a day later, now I think they have a very good chance. In fact, I think by a hair, by a half point, I have them as the best team in the league. Because not only did they fix their point guard problem, but they got a guy with vengeance on his mind to beat his former team in the Bucks. I think he's a great anecdote for Damian Lillard. And I still think, you know, 1-5, they're the most talented team. So those are the two title favorites. It's not particularly close. The Bucks and the Celtics, the market loved each of the trade for each of the teams. And I think the Nuggets have a chance to upset them. Jokic is playing like the best player in the world. The Suns have as much talent. Outside of that, I am selling my stock on the Sixers, Heat, Warriors. I don't think it's a wide-open NBA title market anymore. I think there's two teams at the top of the East, and then we'll see who faces them in the finals.
He's Mackenzie Rivers, pregame.com, bettingpredators.com. Follow him on X, Twitter, at Macken Rivers, M-A-C-K-E-N Rivers. Follow him there. Of course, you get all the stuff at pregame.com, bettingpredators.com, and check him out there as well, because you like to make money, and he tells you how to do it. Mac, appreciate you, my friend. We'll talk next week.
Appreciate you, Patrick. Talk to you.
Mackenzie Rivers, pregame.com, bettingpredators.com, with us on the HRMP guest line, Money Plays, Late Hits.
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Dude.
You know what old Jack Burton always says at a time like this?
Who?
Jack Burton. Me.
This is Late Hits on ESPN 97.5. Presented by Dr. Jennifer Joseph. Get Physical RX. By Dr. Krista Reyes, Texas Sinus and Snoring Audiology. And by BetUS, the original online sportsbook. For the Veradex Community Bank Studios, here's Patrick Creighton.
So we will get to the week that was in the NFL, but first, the week that is 14-3 Seahawks. Giants knocking on the door, second and five. Daniel Jones looking, throws. It's intercepted. 97-yard pick six. And it's 21-3 Hawks as the Giants' season is about to go up in flames. I mean, I know, look, Daniel Jones is their leading rusher. You know, no Saquon, no offense. Daniel Jones is 17 of 22. You say, oh, that's not bad, right? 137 yards, a little light. But he's got a fumble, and he's got a pick six. It is last year's Daniel Jones does not exist. That was a one-off. That was a mirage. That was Daniel Jones playing at his absolute best, and he'll never get there again. Tonight, you have Daniel Jones from every other year of his career, which is he's got talent, and he can make plays. But he always has a couple of colossal screw-ups that cost you the game. He fumbled inside his own 20 that led to a score, and now he just threw a pick six. He has handed the Seahawks 14 points on a platter. Can't do that in the NFL. Yeah, he's making a lot of money to throw away a football game tonight. However, if I take a look at the ESPN picks for the week, I have the Seahawks at -1.5 tonight. That's good for me. People who took the Giants include Joe Blank, Andrew Carlson, Jeremy Branham, and he who shall not be named because I'm not getting fired. Do not say his name, Belmer, do not. You never say the king's name. Never.
No, but I was going to say Daniel Jones got juked out of his shoes, too, trying to chase down that pick six.
So I will, it looks like I'm going to finish the week, let's see, 9-6. So not terrible. 9-6, I'm going to finish the week. Might be the best of everybody here this week, actually. 9-6. AC was having a good week.
Right up until tonight.
Although, I'm not going to bag him for picking the Chiefs. We all had the Chiefs. In fact, we all had the Chiefs and lost. Only Mapes had the Titans. The rest of us had the Bengals and lost. Only John Granato had the Commanders. The rest of us had the Eagles and lost. Only three of us had the Rams to win. I was one of them. Let's get to the week that was. And we mentioned about the Bears and their colossal failure and their complete idiocy right after they chose not to kick a field goal. This happened.
Would have been a 35-yard field goal. Instead, Denver takes over with the ball and one timeout. Wilson on first down. He's looking deep. He's got Mims down there. There goes Mims, the rookie, tackled at the 34, and Denver's already in field goal range.
You know, call me crazy, but Russell Wilson, 21 of 28, 223, three touchdowns. He didn't play terrible. He was very solid. Spread the ball around. and the Broncos come back from 21-0 down, down 21-7 at the half. Down 28-7 with 4 minutes to go in the third. And they come back to win 31-28 as the Bears just don't want to win games. In London, Desmond Ridder, not the guy.
Robinson motions across. Ridder's looking back to the right side and throws an interception. He threw it right into the hands of Darius Williams, who's going to take it all the way to the end zone.
Oh, hello, Mr. Pick Six. Jaguars all over the Falcons, 23-7. In the UK, where there was some anarchy. Lamar Jackson, yeah, he is definitely more of that guy.
Third down with 17 seconds to go in the first half. Shotgun. Jackson up high, handled. Andrews, touchdown, Baltimore for his tight end. And the Ravens get the score before halftime.
And he went up top. And as someone told me many years ago, just put it up on the top shelf where the kids can't get it, and I'll make the play. And Mark Andrews did exactly that. You know, you hide the cookies, hide the presents. No. Mark Andrews made sure he found that was unwrapped. Maybe before the big day.
That put the Ravens up 21-3 at the half. They stomp a mud hole in the Browns, 28-3 on the road. In Indy, it took a little OT, but then the Rams unleashed Puka power.
Puka will be the first option for Matt Stafford.
Third down and four. Stafford throws. There he is. Nacua to the end zone. Rams win!
I don't know how in that situation you don't know where the hell Puka Nacua is. I mean, at this point, shouldn't everybody know who he is and where he is at all times? Yeah, that's why they lost. It happens. This was a game that we were talking about on Friday, the Bucks and the Saints. Do we have a rebirth of Baker Mayfield?
On a third and goal, Baker hesitates, wanted his tight end. And throws, diving, but did he get in the end zone? Down at Tompkins, touchdown! Wow!
Mayfield, 246 and three scores. The Bucs handle the Saints in New Orleans, 26-9. The Bucs are 3-1. I don't know that anybody had the Bucs being 3-1. The Eagles needed overtime to fend off the Commies.
From 54 for the win, on the way, it is there! And the Eagles remain unbeaten.
Skin o' the teeth. You know, the Eagles need overtime after surrendering the lead. Eagles were up in this game early, right? No, they were up. They were down. Actually, they were down 17-10. Then they were up 21-17. They were up 21-17 going to the fourth. Then they got a field goal to make it 24-17. Gave it up. Scored on a 28-yard touchdown pass from Hurts to A.J. Brown with under 2 minutes to go and gave it up. And Jake Elliott bailed their asses out. The Vikings, well, Kirk Cousins threw a very early pick six. And the Vikings looked like, oh man, are they really going to Viking this up against the Panthers? But the Vikings had Justin Jefferson.
The final play of the quarter. Could be a freebie. Cousins to the end zone. It is caught. Jefferson for another touchdown.
The Vikings finally get in the win column 21-13 over the 0-4 Carolina Panthers. Now, don't let your heart stop here because I'm going to say something absolutely crazy. The Chargers defense stepped up late.
It's first and goal. O'Connell intercepted. It's picked off. Asante Samuel.
Watch Asante Samuel as he comes off and gets the interception. O'Connell, thinking it's man coverage and that he's chasing Adams inside, throws it to Myers on the out route. But Samuels is right there to step in front of it and pick it up.
Asante Samuel Jr. spares the Chargers the embarrassment of losing to a fourth-round rookie quarterback in Aiden O'Connell. Aiden O'Connell outplayed Justin Herbert on Sunday. Justin Herbert, 13 of 24 for 167 yards, a touch and a pick. That's it. In their own building. Rivalry game. But the Chargers escape with the victory. For the Patriots, it was not a good day at Jerry World.
Second down, a lot of time. Jones just can't find it. Comes back across the field. This time he pays the price. Deron Bland, pick six.
Interception, pick six, one of two Mac Jones picks on the day. The Cowboys absolutely throttled the Patriots 38-3 in Jerry World. 1 week after being embarrassed in the desert, they come home and they smoke the Patriots. Meanwhile, we may have a new front runner for NFL MVP, and his name is Christian McCaffrey.
First down and goal. McCaffrey.
Again, and for the fourth time today, Christian McCaffrey scores a touchdown.
While other teams struggled with the Cardinals, the 49ers put them away late. They score twice in the fourth quarter. McCaffrey, three touchdowns rushing, one receiving, 106 yards on the ground. Niners crush the Cards 35-16, and finally, well, Stephon Diggs came to play.
First and 10 from the 13. To the end zone. It's a touchdown catch. Stephon Diggs for the third time today.
Watch this route, Jim. I'm going on. Oh, that made me hurt a little bit right there.
Stephon Diggs, six catches, a 120, and three scores. Bills destroy the Dolphins 48-20. Johnny, you want to get through the rest of these here? What do we got? Two left? All right, let's get these quick. Derrick Henry, bully.
The explosiveness they've been looking for. Speaking of explosiveness, Derrick Henry in the open field. Derrick Henry's gone. Vintage King.
It's called swing gate right here. When you come up the field, you create different levels. Up the field too far, look at the level right there, and then.
Man, the Bengals are absolute trash right now. Derrick Henry, a 122 and a touchdown on the ground, averaging 5.5 yards per carry as the Titans slam the Bengals 27-3. And Sunday night, Zach Wilson versus Patrick Mahomes. Seems like a mismatch, but late in the game, Zach Wilson making things happen.
Zach Wilson looking to run for the two. Bouncing outside. Got there. Target.
Unfortunately, it wouldn't last. The Jets tie this game on that two-point conversion by Zach Wilson in the third quarter, but the Chiefs would come out with a 23-20 victory in the swamps of Jersey in a game that was way closer than anybody had any right to think it would be. Zach Wilson was actually decent. 28 of 39, 245, two scores, two-point conversion. Patrick Mahomes threw two picks in this game late that let the Jets get back in the game in the second half. He was only 18 of 30 for 203. He had one touchdown. The Chiefs ran 204 on the ground, including a buck 15 from Isaiah Pacheco, as the Chiefs get out of there with a victory to move to 3-1. But Jets have to be happy they got a much better game this week from Zach Wilson than they did a week ago. All right, coming up next, it's time for a little WTF. Next.
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Insert random audio clip now.
Mr. Campbell, send out an amendment as acceptable to the author. Is there objection to the author's amendment? The chair has none. Amendment is adopted.
Late night Houston sports talk only happens here. It's Late Hits with Patrick Creighton. Presented by Dr. Jennifer Joseph. Get Physical RX. By Dr. Krista Reyes, Texas Sinus and Snoring Audiology. And by BetUS. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Patrick Creighton.
Time for a little WTF, and we start off with a little accolades and some honor for one of the greatest baseball players of his generation, Miguel Cabrera. Cabrera, who is 3,174 hits, 511 homers, 1,881 RBI, four-time batting champ, two-time home run champ, two-time MVP. Seven Silver Sluggers. 12-time All-Star. World Series champion. And the most recent Triple Crown winner in Major League Baseball in 2012. Miguel Cabrera took the field for the final time on Sunday.
Number 24 has grabbed a glove and he's heading out to first base by himself. Miguel Cabrera standing at first, asking his teammates, come on, join me out here for a minute. But instead, this crowd on their feet saluting Miguel Cabrera one final time.
Kid was a World Series hero at 20 years old. It's amazing to think about the career of this young man. He's not young anymore. He's now 40. So he's a man. He's a man because he's 40.
He was actually the last active player to have played a game against the Expos in the league. Yeah.
It is absolutely incredible the career that he has had. And it came to an end on Sunday. Miguel Cabrera is a first ballot Hall of Famer. Just absolutely incredible career. Tom Brady apparently practices Irish diplomacy. John, are you familiar with Irish diplomacy?
I am not.
Irish diplomacy is a skill. It is an art form. And that art form is telling somebody to go to hell while making them look forward to the trip. RG3 on his podcast, RG3 and the Ones, tells a story of joint practice with Tom Brady and how Tom Brady essentially displayed Irish diplomacy to him.
This isn't a bad story about Tom. It reflects his competitive nature. So my very first experience with Tom was, I believe, in 2014 or 2015. We had a joint practice with you guys at the Patriots. I'm watching Tom every single time he takes a snap. When you get around one of the greats in the game, and you know this, you want to take as much from them as you possibly can. So after practice, I approached Tom and I asked him, I said, man, listen, I would absolutely love to just come work out with you, watch tape with you in the off season, be able to really soak soak up all of this Tom Brady-isms as I possibly can. And Gronk, this man looked me dead in the face in the nicest tone ever. He said, I can't do that for you, RG. I think you have a bright future, but we're competitors right now, and I can't give you any of my secrets. And I'm just like, yo, Tom Brady just told me to F off without saying F off in the most nice way possible. But I was like a little crushed by it.
And that's a great story. And it is very much on brand with who Tom is. Tom is not a malicious guy, but he is the ultimate competitor. And I'm not going to help you, even though you play in the other conference, Rook. You play in the other conference. I am not going to help you because you don't play for my team. And you know what? I respect the hell out of that. I respect that that's how Brady handled it. He was polite, said no. And I respect that RG3 didn't take it as the jerk. I'm going to go like slash his tire. Like, he handled it like a man, right? By the way, that was a great story. Tom Brady, Irish diplomacy, telling you to bleep off and making you think, wow, I think I'm going to go bleep off. That was awesome. It's going to do it for us for tonight. Appreciate Mackenzie Rivers, bettingpredators.com, pregame.com. My man, Big Johnny B, on the other side of the glass. Our callers, texters, tweeters, twitchers. We're back next week, man. I'm heading up to New York this week. I have some family things to take care of. Unfortunate situation, but have some estate things I got to take care of for the family. But we're back next week. In the meantime, we get to enjoy some soccer matches to break Glenn Davis. We get some Dynamo soccer. And we'll get Texans football and Astros playoff baseball at the Juice Box. Don't miss it. Have a great night. H-Town!
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. We're your daddy.
You was a toilet baby. Tip just plopped down like a little old turd, just right down in a bowl.